Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I'm your host today, Mike Keyes. Today we have a conversation with Eric Anderson, who has training as an engineer. Eric, you've done a number of things besides engineering, but first, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike. Glad to be here.
So what sort of engineering work have you done?
So I started life as a computer programmer years ago, did some early database work on early Apple systems. I have even done a little bit of programming on an old Burroughs computer in hexadecimal, if you can believe it. So that's been a while ago. Mm-hmm. I got sidetracked eventually and ended up going to law school and practiced with a couple of major law firms, both overseas and here in the U.S., and advised technology and software startup companies.
You know, training in law, that sounds like training in argumentation, isn't it? Don't lawyers, I mean, basically they're trained how to make arguments, right?
Well, it's interesting. I think it's been useful, frankly, in approaching the evolution design debate to have that background and be able to see the strengths and weaknesses of arguments and kind of the assumptions underlying the arguments.
Great. Well, we will definitely pay attention to your comments of that nature as we get into a topic that you have kind of broached in an earlier podcast back in 2015, actually back in June 2015, and we're kind of following up on that. But you have done a lot of thinking about intelligent design, so why don't you choose a jumping off point here, Eric?
Yeah, I think as I talked about in the earlier podcast, we talked a little bit about some of the examples that were raised by opponents of intelligent design as to whether something was designed or not. And one of the things I mentioned in passing that I'm hoping we can cover in this podcast is the idea that physical objects contain information by their mere existence. That takes a little bit of unpacking. That's a mouthful, but that's kind of the idea that I wanted to discuss today.
Right. And why do you find that interesting, or why do critics of design find that interesting?
Well, there's kind of three ways that a critic of design will there's kind of three things they can do if a committed materialist is looking at the design argument. And let me give you an example of how this comes up in the debate, because that might be the easiest way to talk through it.
Okay.
A design proponent will often look at something in biology, you know, DNA might be the most obvious example, and say, hey, here's something that is an information-rich system. By our experience, we know that these types of systems only come about through an intelligence, and furthermore, there's no legitimate explanation for how this could have happened naturally, and so we draw a design inference that this likely was the result of an intelligent activity. And so at that point, the committed materialist who doesn't want to look at the possibility of design really has three things they can do. One, they can explain it through natural processes. Another one they can do is to ignore the idea that there's information there, and then which I talked a little bit about. And then the third one is to really trivialize the information that we find in biology, and that's kind of the one that I want to focus on today.
Okay, so if someone says, well, everything has information in it, even just rocks, this is kind of what you're getting at, right, Eric? That might seem to be an effective criticism, trivializing the design inference of the information in biological organisms.
Exactly. And so one of the ways that this will come up is that someone will give an example. I've heard lots of different examples, everything from salt water to a snowflake to a rock rolling down a hill to Saturn's rings. And somebody will say, well, look, there's a lot of information in something like Saturn's rings. If we were to look at all of the particles and the rocks and the dust and their sizes and shapes and trajectories, and we map that all out, that would be a tremendous amount of information. And so the implication that they're trying to draw there is, great, there's information in DNA, but there's information in lots of other things that you, design proponent, don't think are designed, and so therefore we really can't trust your design inference in the case of DNA because there's information, you know, everywhere else too. That's kind of the approach.
So just to think about this a little bit further, you've raised a number of interesting issues. So suppose we download a NASA image of Saturn's rings, to take your Saturn example, mm-hmm. and we store it on our computer. It would take a certain number of megabytes or gigabytes or whatever, depending on the resolution of the image.
Exactly.
So is that part of what you're talking about here?
Not exactly. What I think the argument is really focusing on is not so much an image, but that the physical object itself, that there is somehow information contained out there, say in Saturn's rings, just waiting to be discovered. It exists already.
Okay.
Yes, we've discovered information in DNA, but if we went out and studied the cosmos, we would discover information out there too, and so therefore there's nothing really special about what we see in biology.
Okay, so just the mere arrangement of material in the rings is information rich, whether you take a photograph of it or not. That's the claim?
Yeah, and really just the information being there in and of itself, in the object in and of itself is kind of the claim.
So where do you go with this, Eric?
Well, I think the first thing that we have to do is recognize there's really two problems with this claim. First of all, it conflates two very different concepts that we ought to spend a little bit of time on. And then secondly, even if we adopt the premise that there's information everywhere in everything, you know, in all the particles of the universe, it does not follow that we can't draw a design inference in biology. And so those are really two high-level problems.
Okay, why don't we deal with the first one in this podcast, and then we'll follow up with another conversation getting into the second one.
Sure.
So again, restate the first one and then jump into it.
Yeah, so the first problem with this idea that there's information everywhere in everything is that it's conflating two very different things. One is a description or information about an object with information contained in an object. So if we think about it this way, let's suppose that we were to send an intrepid explorer, a manned craft, out to Saturn, and this explorer had the purpose, the assignment, to map Saturn's rings in incredible detail. Mm-hmm. And so they take a lot of photographs, they do a lot of scans, they look at all the various particles and their sizes and shapes and trajectories and makeup, and it's true that they would produce a huge amount of information as a result of that activity. But if we think about how this occurs, and if we're careful in thinking through the process, we'll see that the information arises not because it's somehow contained in the particles themselves. It arises by virtue of the activity of that intelligent agent.
So it sounds like the scientist, that is the intelligent agent in this case, is creating information?
Absolutely. He's using his understanding, he's using his tools of investigation, he's using his intelligent activity to produce information about a physical object that exists. Okay, he can't go to Saturn and find written somewhere in the rings how many particles there are. He can't go to Saturn and find written somewhere in the clouds what size and shapes and trajectory of all these things.
Right.
Okay, he has to produce that information by virtue of his intelligent activity. And it can be direct or it can be indirect through the tools that he has, again, intelligently created to help him in this investigative process.
So, Eric, it sounds like there's layers of intelligent design. There's the scientist, and then there's all the tools, apparatus, you know, telescopes, spectroscopy. In other words, there's the scientist's mind, but there's also the devices he's using to detect the object and to describe the object. Does that sound right?
Absolutely. There's his mind. There's the devices that have been created by him or another intelligent being to help in that investigative process. But it actually goes beyond that, because even in the encoding of that information that he has produced, we also have a symbolic system, we have some type of language, we have some type of storage, retrieval, translation mechanisms. We have all these things that are typically associated with information, none of which have anything to do with the physical object itself. These are things that relate to our activity as intelligent beings in producing, storing, retrieving, translating, transmitting information.
A lot of computer hardware and software included.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Which is part of your life story. I mean, you've dealt with this in your professional life.
Yes, absolutely. It's definitely an aspect that we see all the time. I think, even a small child today is very familiar with a tablet or a computer, and we recognize the importance of information, but we need to think through it clearly when we're talking about natural situations.
So you're saying there's a confusing two things that really are separate, but treating them as if they're the same thing?
Right. There's a conflating of the idea of the production of information, which comes from an intelligence, with the idea that the information is somehow residing there in the physical object, which it really isn't. It's produced by the intelligent being in the case of something like Saturn's rings. Think of it this way. If I said to you, translate Saturn's rings into Spanish, you would have no idea what I was talking about. You'd probably say, what do you mean? Because it's a nonsensical request.
Right.
On the other hand, if I had gone out and produced a bunch of information and written a book or a scientific article about Saturn's rings, I could hand that to you and say, translate that into Spanish. It makes perfect sense. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Because one of the hallmarks of information is that it can be transmitted, translated, and so forth. And so that doesn't make any sense with a physical object. It's just a nonsensical type of way to think about a physical object.
Right. And just to clarify for our listeners, there are many different competing definitions of information, but the one that you are particularly interested in, and so am I, is complex specified information, the sort of information that we find in biology. And in this case, we also find it in the scientist's descriptive reservoir of information about Saturn's rings, right?
Yeah, I think that there are, frankly, fewer definitions of information than people like to think. Mm-hmm. If you carefully think through most of them, they really collapse to the same thing. There's been a tremendous confusion around Shannon information. Maybe we can talk about that in another podcast.
Right.
But yes, you know, at the very end of the day, we're interested in complex specified information, the type of thing that we see in biology and the type of thing that really screams out for an explanation.
Right. And we can arguably make the point that that is the most interesting kind of information across multiple disciplines of science and engineering and our daily life. You and I are having a conversation. We're creating and transmitting information. And so I think your first point of the critic of design is conflating the information created by scientists describing Saturn's rings versus the mere physical existence. I think that's a great point. We are out of time for this podcast, but is there any last point you want to make about the first prong of your argument? Any other point you'd like to make about that?
I think for our listeners, the real key point is that you need to carefully think through the process. Anytime you think there's information contained in a physical object by its mere existence, once you actually sit down and analyze, okay, what is happening? How do I, quote unquote, extract that information? What you'll find out is that you're not really extracting information in that object. You are creating information as a result of your intelligent activity, your investigative effort as an intelligent agent.
Very good. Clearly stated. So in our next conversation, Eric, let's pick up on your second point. But for now, thank you for being on the show.
Glad to be here.
This is Mike Keyes with ID the Future. Thanks for joining us and look forward to another conversation with Eric Anderson, engineer and ID proponent.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.